You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Earlier this week, the government announced a plan to invest $1.9 billion into correction facilities across Aotearoa, which would be used to recruit and train staff, provide rehabilitation for inmates on remand, and the expansion of 810 new beds at Waikeria Prison, which had previously been damaged during a prison riot in 2020. For our weekly chat, I spoke to the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez-March to discuss the party's take on the corrections investment, and we also discussed the central bank's recent financial stability report, as well as the Remuneration Authority's decision to increase pay for MPs.
The government recently announced a plan to invest $1.9 billion into correction facilities across Aotearoa, which will be used to train new corrections officers, add 810 new beds to Waikeria Prison, and fund rehabilitation programs for inmates on remand. So what's the Green Party's take on this decision?
Let's make a few things really clear, right? Everybody deserves to be safe. And at the same time, we know mega prisons of this kind do not work. They tend to harm inmates' human rights. And ultimately, it's putting resources at the bottom of the cliff rather than preventing crime from happening in the first place. It proportionate to the amount of resources that is going into ending poverty, towards addiction support services, towards housing our communities. This feels like the government is simply wanting to lock people away, throw the key, and not actually address the many issues that drive crime and harm in our communities in the first place.
If the budget is being used to recruit and train new corrections officers to address the strains caused by staff shortages and expand rehabilitation programs, can you really say that the investment is purely punitive and won't actually have an impact on solving crime in Aotearoa?
Well, it's about what actually prisons do to support people to be safe. And we know actually that prisons do not make people safer because the system hasn't worked anywhere else. I mean, if you look at countries with mass incarceration, such as in the US, they have really high crime rates. Additionally, the government couldn't commit to preventing things like double bunking in prisons, which we know really cause ill mental health and other harms to prisoners, actually then releasing them into our communities in a position where it makes no one safer. So all we are doing here is effectively building a mega prison that hasn't worked in the United States to prevent crime from happening. And we're effectively copying models from countries that simply just have really high incarceration rates and yet have really high rates of crime and inequality.
How would the Greens allocate those $1.9 billion if given the chance? Are there any other areas that you think it would be better spent?
Well, we know that poverty is a pathway towards criminalization. We think that by resourcing the $1.9 billion into more housing, into boosting income support, and actually taxing the rich so that we have more resources rather than just $1.9 billion would go a longer way. The reality is that many people who end up in prison are people, disabled people, and people who have been failed by oranga tamariki, by work and income. And we have to start there rather than simply assuming that by locking them up and throwing the keys away, we'll somehow sort all the things that lead people to commit crimes in the first place.
All right, thanks for that. Moving on to the next topic. Last week, the central bank released its half-yearly financial stability report, which sheds light on the status of our country's financial system. And there were a number of key takeaways from the report, with one of them being the fact that Kiwis were struggling to meet mortgage repayments due to increasing interest rates and that an increase in housing costs were adding to cost of living pressures. So what's the Green Party's take on this?
Well, that report should come as no surprise to everyone, and particularly the Greens. We've long been campaigning to lower housing prices and rent prices by introducing things like rent controls and a freeze on rents. The truth is that what this government is responding to this report and all the other economists who have highlighted a growing inequality is wanting to lower inflation by means of increasing unemployment. Effectively, we have the National Party talking about a really tight labor market and things like, you know, raising maximum sustainable employment. And now they are pushing people off a cliff, relying on job losses, while at the same time punishing beneficiaries in order to drive down inflation. We think there are other ways to lower inflation, such as taxing the wealthy few and redistributing that money into things like state housing that ensures people can pay their rent, rather than, as governments throughout the decades have done, scapegoat those already struggling to make ends meet to lower inflation. Well, for example, banks and other companies continue to make really, really high profits, some of them record profits at the same time that many people are struggling.
The report also said that cost of living increases were being partially impacted by an increase in net migration, which was driving up demand for rental properties and slowing the supply of new housing. Is it possible that there are factors other than government policies that are driving up the cost of living in Aotearoa?
Well, immigration policies are set by governments, right? But I think the consensus on whether net migration and how net migration contributes to inflation needs to not be seen in isolation, right? Because otherwise we get caught in the cycle of politicians in New Zealand first and, you know, Labour at the same time blaming each other for and blaming migrants for cost of living pressures. Net migration is only an issue if we have governments that have refused to build enough public housing, if we have governments that have refused to create well-paying jobs. And so when politicians such as Winston Peters, for example, focuses on net migration, he's simply scapegoating a group of people who actually are here to help us build homes, who are here to help us diversify our economy, rather than just simply contribute to the cost of living pressures.
Going forward, do you think that the government is going to take the report's findings into account when addressing our current cost of living crisis?
This government doesn't have a track record of taking evidence and data from researchers and experts. We see this in areas of climate change. We have countless of reports around what government needs to do to do their part on climate change, and yet we have a government that is trying to open coal mines and do things like bottom trawling. So I don't have any confidence at all that they'll take the findings of economists that, for example, have called for capital gains tax, like this report that has talked about housing costs being one of the main drivers.
All right, thank you very much. Moving on to the last topic. The Remuneration Authority recently conducted a review of their pay system and determined that ministers of parliament should be getting paid more, and so their salaries will receive a staggered increase of 10% starting from this parliamentary term. So what's your take on this, especially being a minister of parliament yourself?
I'm a member of parliament, but I think, the feedback I've gotten from the community is how much people would want to have in their profession something like an independent remuneration authority. And the key thing we're focusing on is ensuring that everyone has really good incomes. I mean, we've taken policies through the election to ensure that we can lift everyone's incomes. Politicians are in a bit of a conundrum in that we should not be able to set our salaries ourselves, and this is why we have that authority, but at the same time, politicians of red and blue stripes have created systems that make it impossible for workers at the front lines to be able to secure those same pay rises. And this is why the Greens would be calling for greater increases to the minimum wage, for better bargaining power for workers so that they can have the same consistent pay increases. And I think anything else, such as the Prime Minister donating his pay increase to charity, is a distraction from the fact that he's creating policies that lower wages and throw people into poverty level benefits at the same time.
Amidst a cost of living crisis, with numerous public services being cut and with people in professions like medicine struggling to achieve adequate payment themselves, do you think that an increase in payment for MPs is a slap in the face to everyday New Zealanders?
Particularly when we put it in the context that all the things you mentioned, such as those job losses, are government choices. So yes, we do have a government that is choosing to increase poverty. We have a government that is choosing to create those job losses. They didn't just happen by themselves. And a government that is lowering the bargaining power of workers to secure pay increases. And so yes, it is a slap in the face from this government to those workers, because this government could be looking at workers and say, you too deserve a pay increase. You too should not be losing your job, and you too deserve that same security. And this is what the Greens are campaigning for, so to ensure that every worker has livable income.
That was was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.